Okay. So all of you who are on the call, you probably just heard that we're going to be recording this, and I'll make sure that you all get a link to the recording so that, you know, if you miss something, don't feel like you have to transcribe word for word if you're taking notes or something like that. It'll all be available to you in a recorded form afterwards. So let me just take a moment to welcome you all. My name is Neil Statton from naturaldogblog.com. And I want to thank you all for coming tonight to our free conference call with Kevin Behan, who is with us. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, thank you, Neil. Nice to be here.
Many of you probably heard the interview that we did two weeks ago. And during that interview, we talked about all kinds of things, Kevin's biography and the new book that's in the works. And some of you who jumped on early may have heard Kevin saying he's in the last stages of getting it off to the editor, and that's exciting news. And then, of course, we talked some how-to as well. So what I anticipate is that we're going to mostly just be here to take your questions, and I'm not sure the best way to do this, but my guess is that I'm going to put this into like a Q&A mode, and then I believe you can just hit *6 on your phone, and that will allow you to raise your hand, and then I can unmute you. And that way we just make sure that there's no noise on the line from everyone's phones being unmuted. So let me just see how this works, and I'm hoping that all of you came with great questions. We had some submitted when people signed up for the call, so that's great. But our priority will be people who are here live on the call to get their questions answered, and we'll have a chance for follow up and some live interaction. You can ask me, you can ask Kevin, you can ask both of us. And that's pretty much going to be the format. So again, hit *6 when you're ready. And I'm going to put this in, give me a moment here. I'm going to put it in Q&A mode. Hopefully this will work just fine. And there, Kevin, you should be unmuted.
Right.
So at this point, anyone who has a question, just hit *6. And Kevin, I was wondering if you just wanted to take a second and, if there was anything that in particular that you wanted to address, maybe having thought further on the interview that we did before, or, what you're hoping to be able to help people with tonight.
Well, I'd like to try to make sure I bring it down to planet Earth as much as possible, because it is something very tangible and practical and real once you learn to see it. And I just want people to learn to trust what they feel when they see something. And if something doesn't add up, really pay attention to that. That's really how you can learn exactly what's going on inside the animal. So that's what I'm hoping to be able to communicate with people if you think it needs clarification, Neil, just jump right in and keep me on the track.
All right, will do. So I'm sure no one has raised their hand yet, but I'm sure someone there has a burning question. Does anyone want the floor here? Just hit *6, and that will let us know.
Yeah, the other thing to bear in mind, too, is when you look at everything in terms of the immediate moment, you can, that term granulate, how fine a grain you can see. You can really look in really close or back, zoom way back out to see, I dare say, nature's point of view, the individual's point of view, the group's point of view, the point of view of any two beings in an interaction. So that's the other thing I want to emphasize about just interpreting everything in terms of immediate moment. The language can be unwieldy, which is why it's so much easier to talk in terms of human mental constructs, but those are always misleading. So that's why I use words. I'm kind of stickler about putting it a certain way, which makes it a little bit unapproachable, but I think it's all doable if we hang in there.
Yeah, we'll make sure everything's clear for everyone on this call. One thing that I hope you'll talk a little bit more about too, toward the end of our interview, you started talking about how when you see dogs interacting with people, with each other, that now you see it as one big group mind. And
right.
I'm sure that people on this call will benefit from being able to hear a little bit more about how they can sort of engage in the exact same way and seeing these interactions as a whole, the gestalt
right.
of what's going on, as opposed to just the singular thing. We
yeah.
do have a couple questions, so do you want to get started?
Sure.
All right. So let's see. I'm going to do my best to make this work here. So the first person to raise their hand is unmuted, and of course it's an anonymous caller. So if you raised your hand, I think it says here that you have a 611 area code, so I don't know where that is, but... Hello, did you raise your hand with a question?
Hello.
Hello. Yes, who's speaking?
Oh, it's sorry. It's a 519 area code, but I didn't know whether you can hear me or not.
Yep, we can hear you just fine. You said
okay,
your name
great.
Is,
well,
I'll
go.
Dory.
Sorry.
You said your name is Dory.
No, my name is Debbie.
Debbie. Okay, great.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Kevin and Neil. Okay, I've got a very specific question about what's going on, I guess, in a pack dynamic. I have two German Shepherds, 4-year-old male and a 3-year-old female. And about 3 or 4 times a year, I have a friend visit who has two German Shepherds. One of them is the litter mate to my female.
Right.
And it's that particular dog that visits tends to really get in the face of my male dog barking incessantly. And it really tends to disturb the whole dynamic. And I'm just wondering, how would I best address that with the four dogs together? When they're out in the field and we're walking them and they're kind of doing a mutual activity, smelling or whatever, it's not an issue. It seems to be more of an issue in our backyard and in a more of an enclosed space, if that makes
right.
sense.
Yeah, oh yeah. One moment is static and one moment is flowing, and that's a whole different dynamic from the dog's point of view. So generally, you want to look at like-to-like creating friction. And
okay.
So I would have anticipated the female-to-female from where, you know, from the beginning of it. So I'm curious about, however, the male. What's similar between the so it's the other male in the face of your female dog?
No, it's the other female, the visiting female.
Oh, the visiting female
in the face of my male dog.
Okay, and
the visiting female is the litter mate to my female, and my female's response to that is almost. She's showing fear. She just wants to avoid it. She doesn't like it. She probably senses the tension, I guess, going on.
Okay.
And
okay.
So that intimidates. That really intimidates her quite a bit.
Okay. Well, that's the like to like then. If they're litter mates, then that's the.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's a very powerful like to like. So, how old were they when you got them from the litter?
I got mine at 9 weeks. My friend got the sister at 7 weeks.
Okay. And what was the mother like? Do you recall?
The mother, yeah, very reactive type dog, very vocal dog.
Right. How was she with the puppies?
She was quite good with the puppies.
Well, I know they're really good. I mean, I know they're all great, but... A lot of breeders will leave the mother with the puppies too long, and
mm-hmm.
or they'll let puppies that are too aggressive with each other work it out, and that puts a charge on the dog. So it sounds like this is the old charge from the early litter imprint. Could have been the
okay.
mother could have been the mother pinning them down when she started to get sick and tired of the weaning thing. So I used to breed shepherds, and I would take the puppies away from the mother when I could see she just couldn't handle it anymore. And it might have been a little too early from the convenience and nursing point of view, but I preferred that they not get any charge from the mother. And sometimes there'd be one real dynamic puppy in the litter that was just whooping up on the weaker ones. And I would prevent. I would separate the litter into different groups so that didn't happen. But I don't think many breeders do that. And there's a lot of this charge is being put on from the parent to the young ones, and building up this whole dysfunctional stress load, which is functional in the wild because it makes them spooky and avoid real strong moose prey animals that we're going to fight back. And then they have this tuning device there for, so that they will only go after the ones that are weak, and that gives them power of discrimination. Yeah, so it just sounds like there was all this tension in the litter that now, when they see each other, the novelty, whenever you get something really different, you go deeper into the emotional battery, if you will, and earliest lessons come up to the surface. So the best thing you can do, I mean, this is just a short-term visit, so the best thing you could do is, I mean, if I were in your situation, I wouldn't have them in static moments. Is it for the entire duration or just in the beginning?
It's for the entire duration.
Okay.
It most often happens, too, I neglected to mention, when there's a lot of excitement. So when we first go outside, any
right.
change, anticipated excitement, that's when it really, this outburst occurs.
Yeah, well, for those transitional moments, so remember, like to like, but the more different they can fit together. Opposites can connect. Like to like, but opposites can connect. Now, there is a lot of stuff you can do. So what does your male dog do when this dog gets in his face?
He really doesn't engage.
What does he like with other dogs?
He's very tolerant. He's not aggressive. He tends to just stand there and let her do it.
Okay, so he's got all the forbearance in the dynamic. Then what you should do with the female is get the charge off her system before she comes around your dog. And your friend should be giving her a bite out there on the street before she comes in the house. And the other thing I wanted to emphasize is if you have a box strategically placed in and out of the door, so one of them gets up on the box while the other one goes through the door, and this physical separation makes it really easy for them to fit in a small space, and then they'll start to learn. And it sounds like the female's got to do all the work here. Does the female dog sleep on the bed of your friend?
Yes, she does.
Yeah, so all that kind of stuff. You're not going to shift the female dog. This is your friend visiting. If I were you, I'd put your male dog safe and sound, just so I'd mechanically separate them, because there's a lot of stuff going on. What about your male dog? Does he sleep on the bed?
No.
Oh, good, good. Okay. What about your female dog? Any of the other dogs? Does he have a drive to get up on a couch? Stuff like that?
If we let him, he will.
Yeah, see, that's the like to like again. So they both have this. Another way of saying it is what's happening is she's trying to out-vibrate your male dog. And getting up on beds is trying to out-vibrate others in the surroundings. Now, that might sound like dominance, but I won't go into how it actually isn't. But everything has to stratify in a social dynamic, so they all go, I like to use the word pitch, they all go to their pitch to make themselves different, and this way it's very easy to fit together. It's sort of like staying in your lane if you're going down the road or in the highway. You have to keep to your own pitch, your own vibration, otherwise you're going to run into stuff. So it sounds like they got a lot of personality traits that are exactly alike, and these propensities, and that's the friction of like to like. So the more you can get him vibrating at the right pitch, but it's probably more her than him, given what you've described. And you're not likely to affect that. Yes, you're not likely to have much impact on how your friend does anything. So you want your friend to come in your house, feel at home, let her dogs take over the house. I would just protect your dog from that, both your dogs from that. At least get the male out of the situation indoors. And they can all hang out. You can all go on walks together where they'll naturally find their own pitch, and there's no that friction because they're being I would just do, but that's what's going on. Like to like, too much friction.
Great. Okay, thank you.
Oh, good. Thank you, Debbie.
Kevin, do you think it would make any difference if it's the two females who are sort of vibing off each other and it's causing the friend's dog, and ideally the friend would be finding some way to offload the charge, offload the energy?
Well, what do you mean? Debbie's had the male and female, and her friend had two females, or was it a male and female as well?
My friend had two females.
Oh, okay.
Well, so what
a lot of tension. That's a good point. You know, there could be a lot of tension between the two females that other dog can put on your male as well. Because that's interesting. You said he's very tolerant, so he could be the magnet for her built-up charge. Stuff she can't put on the other female, she may be putting on him. So, again, you want to protect your dog's wet nose from that hot socket.
Okay.
All right. And don't worry about dog feeling left out and being the one to they don't think like that, since they don't think. So you're doing it for his own good, and it's just the easiest way for a short term. It's just not worth hassling everybody so much that way. Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Debbie.
You're welcome.
This next question button. And by the way, if any of you have any, you know, if you get your question answered, you have follow-up questions, feel free to email them to us. You can just send it to neil@naturaldogblog.com, and I'll make sure that Kevin gets any follow-up questions that you have. And for those of you who have come in since I announced this, if you have a question, just hit *6, and that should enable you to get in the queue to ask your question. So next, Christine. Is that?
That would be me.
All right.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Kevin. I've actually been on your website quite a bit.
Oh, are you Christine? Okay, got it.
I have three dogs: Bodie, Duncan, and Diva.
Oh, sure, Diva and Duncan.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the thing that I have that's been happening recently, that I'm just kind of curious about, and I would like to know what's the best way to handle it. I have a crate. They each have their own crates, but I have one crate that's in the den that's next to my computer, which it's actually Bodie's crate, but Duncan really likes it.
Okay.
And at any rate, when I'm sitting here at the computer, Duncan usually will go and get in the crate, and the other two will kind of lay down around my chair. And lately, Diva's been crowding Duncan for some odd reason. When he's in the crate, she'll crowd him. And it's not necessarily anything that I see right away, but Duncan picks up on it, even if he's not looking at her. And he'll set to growling. And she'll come over, and she'll kind of stand right over him and give him, like, a hard stare. And she doesn't do anything physically towards him, but it really unnerves him, and he's got this whole really, the growl thing changes from like a deep, really threatening growl into a kind of a whining growl, and sometimes you get that real good C going on in his mouth. And I'm just not sure what's going on there, so I'll stop now, and I'll let you say something.
Well, now you say this is relatively new.
Yeah, she doesn't, just the past couple of months, she's never really done that before with Duncan.
And who usually goes in that crate? Whose crate is that?
Well, it's actually Bodie's crate. That's the one that I put him in, but Duncan likes it. Whenever I'm in the den, that's where he goes and lays down. Bodie doesn't have any real interest in it.
Okay, so Duncan gravitates to the crate by the computer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And if Diva's in a crate and Duncan goes by, does she react to Duncan?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay, and what else is going on that's interesting between them?
Well, they're the two that get along the best, I guess I could say. They, when I'm out in the fields, they're running and going off someplace together, and they kind of interact together, and Bodie's usually off by himself.
Right.
But when I first, see, I had Bodie first, then I adopted Duncan, and then I adopted Diva, so she was like the last one on board, and
how
Duncan
old was she
had,
when you got her?
I'm sorry?
How old was she when you got her?
She was about a year and a half.
And do these dogs sleep on the bed? This may be a
Oh, none of them.
None of them.
None of them.
Okay.
My bad.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
And if you pet one, does the other one intercede? If you pet Duncan, does Diva get in between you?
Oh, they always do.
Okay.
All three of them do that.
Oh, okay. Okay,
and
what
and
have you been working on the computer lately? Is there anything different you're working on?
No, usually when I go on, it's to check my email or it's to, you know, check Facebook or I do my banking and budgeting and that kind of thing online. And usually when I'm at the computer, they'll try to bother me a little bit to get attention, but I ignore them, and they'll all go lay down and do whatever. And so that's why I don't really quite understand what's going on between the two of them. And this is the order of adoption, and I don't know if it'll help. Do you want, like, the ages or circumstances of the other ones when I adopted them at all?
Yeah, anything... Anything that might give me a hook. So go ahead.
Yeah,
what else
I know. I know. Bodie was my first. I purchased him from an excellent breeder, and he was 6 months old. And when he was about 4.5 months old, I adopted Duncan, who was 4 months old when I adopted him.
Yep.
And I had Bodie neutered just prior to adopting Duncan because I thought it was necessary and I wished I never had, but at any rate.
Yeah.
And always before I introduce a new dog, I do a meet and greet so that I know they're going to at least get along off-site.
Right.
So I took Bodie to meet Duncan. I adopted him from an animal shelter.
And then when you got Diva, was there friction with Duncan initially?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I was going to tell you a little bit about that because I took Bodie and Duncan to meet Diva at the Humane Society, and they got along fabulously well. Diva and Duncan hit it off right away.
How old was Diva when you got her?
Oh, she was about a year and a half. Duncan.
How long have you had her now?
I've had her a year. I got her a year in October, so last October I had her a year. And she was born
in... Oh, so she's like 3 now.
I'm sorry. Yeah, she's about 3 now. Duncan is a few months older than her, but they're right about the same age, maybe about 5 to 6 months apart.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's what she's doing is pushing energy at him to knock him out of that box. And it's interesting that, you know, we were talking about vibration earlier with
mm-hmm.
Debbie.
That
crate has become, you know, your right, he who sits at the right hand of the master, right arm or whatever the expression is, you know.
Yeah.
So that's become, and the thing about Duncan
thing.
Is that's not, when he's in the crate, he has a position of leverage. He's got an easily defensible situation. He's got the upper hand. I'm curious if there's any vibe going on when he's crated and something's happening. Is he changing in any way with barking at strangers and anything changing in him?
Well, I'll tell you, Duncan is the one that has the anger management issues. So he's always barking and growling at people and everything that walks by our house. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that's been, I don't know, since I've been kind of working lightly with the NDT, he's the one that's actually the most noticeably changed for the better in that he's not tightly wound like he used to be. He's a lot more relaxed and supple, and I mean, I get the big open mouth with him a lot and the lolling, flapping tongue.
Did you say he's growling back at her, or it's just her?
Oh, no, she doesn't growl at him. She just kind of pressures him.
Right, she's standing over, and who was doing the growling you were talking about?
He's growling. He's growling massively.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, when I first adopted Diva and brought her home for the first 2 weeks, and actually, I'll tell you what, this might have something to do with that. This is going to take a while to get this all out, so
yep.
Kind of bear with me. But the first 2 weeks, Duncan would attack Diva, especially
right.
around food. And I fed them in separate places, but if she ate and when she was done eating, he would go up to her and kind of sniff at her mouth, and he would immediately attack her, viciously attack her. Sometimes he would draw blood, and there was one time when, and I used to let my dogs up on the couch with me, and I don't do that anymore, but back then, Bodie and Duncan used to get up on the couch all the time, so Diva came around the front of the couch, and the boys were there, and Duncan, without any warning whatsoever, there was no growl, there was nothing, he just, bam, off the couch, piles into her. She's trying to back up, and he hits her so hard that she does a backwards somersault, and you can see the look of surprise on her face when she comes up.
Right. Yeah, see, that's what the crates become, the couch. And you say normally Duncan doesn't go in there, but Bodie does?
It's usually Duncan's crate. I mean, Bodie's crate. And Duncan just likes it there for whatever the reason.
Okay.
I will interject one more thing when I...
Yeah.
When Duncan hit Diva like that, I just immediately, I put him in the crate, which was in the den, and I shut it, and I was so mad at him, and I just banged the crate 2 or 3 times really hard,
right.
And bad dog he was. And that evening, there were like 3 different times when Diva was in the living room, and she would come around into the room where the crate was and stand there and bark at him. She was so upset. And
yeah,
she would go back into the living room, and then a little few minutes later, she'd get back up, go back down, go back over in the den, and stand there and just rag at him.
Right. That's interesting. It could be really interesting for you to think about some of the emails you're sending, or anger at the government for sending in the taxes if that's what you're doing. It could be like something like that it's interesting. Duncan is taking up station in the crate, which is a he's got the leverage by being in that crate. That's a power zone. So she is feeling the impending rush. Now, he may actually have softened a lot and not actually be going to do it, but he may, on the other hand, by doing the work, he's actually getting stronger, and that may be destabilizing her at the same time, because what happens is, as one dog gets stronger, the other ones, if they're wound tightly on this pitch concept, they feel a destabilization. So as the dog gets better, that's not the same dog anymore, as far as they're concerned. You know,
really?
Sort of like someone goes off to war and comes back, and they're different. They've been through Or goes off
to the meditation retreat.
Yes, or you go to the meditation retreat and you come back profoundly altered and everyone can see it. That's right.
Yeah, Duncan needs a lot of that. But, well, another piece that's really kind of interesting about that is that I generally, sometimes I'll try to distract Deva and get her over to me to kind of leave Duncan alone, and sometimes I'll just let it play out. And her tail is wagging really intensely, and she will get into the crate with him.
Yeah.
And they'll get to the point, they'll maneuver around a little bit, and Duncan all the while is growling and whining and kind of showing his teeth and growling and whining, but they'll wind up standing side by side facing the same direction.
Right.
So, Kevin, this is, you know, probably for you, it's also a frequent question, and you know, I get asked this all the time through the website. So maybe it would be a good moment to sort of generalize this a little bit and talk about, you know, let's say you have a two-dog family and, you know, or, you know, in Christine's case, a three-dog family, but you have two dogs who start really kind of vibing on each other. What is a practical thing that you think people should do when they notice that happening? Because odds are it's not happening when the people aren't there. So
right.
If people are there observing it, what do you think is the sort of the next step in the chain to help?
Well, the least effective thing to do is react in that moment in the situation, because you're still feeding it. Even though you might have to do some crisis management to avoid disaster, the problem is that they both, and this is true of all multiple dog situations in general, is they just all can't. They don't get the experience of working together at this high pitch, where they all do their little thing and bring the moose down like a wolf group would be doing. So what I when you see this vibing over position to the owner, it's like they don't know what the purpose of the group is. The purpose of the group isn't to get the attention of the owner. Like, that's a major problem. I equate the word attention with tension. And so when their sense of well-being revolves around the owner's attention, it's just a source of total conflict. So saying that, what I like to do is to make a power zone outside. I have my clients put trolleys out there where the dog gets to bite and bark and lunge, and then I'll get, if they have a couple dogs, we'll post them up close together, and they're used to hearing the dog barking in their ear, and they're both biting the same tug toy at some point. They're outing it. So we're getting them to work together, and this becomes their experience of intense energy instead of vibing over who's got favorite position around the owner. And then you find that when they come in the house, it's been like solved. They've had it redressed. It's sort of, I remember I used to play football in high school, and I really wasn't equipped for that kind of physical sport. And I mean, I just was terrified of my teammates because I was just getting hurt. But once I got that there was this point to the game, then it changed all my dynamic with my teammates. They became my friends, and I didn't care if they hit me and tackled me in practice. It didn't bother me anymore because I finally got what the purpose was. It had something to do with glory on the Saturday game. So that's the thing with the dogs, is all these when you have a couple dogs in a home, by definition, they're going to end up orbiting their owner, looking for that attention as their measure of success and chances of survival, and that's just builds up this intense charge, and you get all this weird stuff starts happening around that. So, practically speaking, I would get Deva this idea of jockeying when you give one attention, the other one gets unsettled. That's a real problem that you have to start to calm down. You have to have one dog lay down and play with the other one. One dog, pet one dog up, the other one has to lay down. And then I would post them up outside and get them really barking and showing all this ferocious energy, as much energy as you can get out of the tank, but it's directed toward the bite object that you're controlling rather than your attention. So that would be the therapy to it. The final thing you can do teach Duncan, change that growl, which is incoherent energy, into a bark, which is coherent energy, and he'll have a way of expressing fear without having to go into acting on it.
Okay, so you said to post them up or not post them up?
To post them up outside. So that becomes where they get a chance to really show all their energy. So everything is an energy equation, and if the most intense expressions come around vying with each other around you, that becomes the organizing principle to their relationship. But if the most intense expressions come from outside on the being posted up and getting a chance to really work and bite that toy and strain at the leash to get the food from your hand, and that becomes where they express all their energy, and they're doing it side by side and parallel to each other, have them separated at first by distance so that they can't get each other, because you're going to really put them into a state of energy that's going to want to go the path of least resistance, i.e. each other. You got to mechanically prevent that by the length of things. And anyhow, that's why I mentioned the football thing. Once my energy, for me, the energy was about surviving practice. That's where all my adrenaline was dedicated.
Mm-hmm.
And once my adrenaline went to the game on Saturday, I mean, practice became a means to an end instead of something to be survived in and of itself. So I like to make that distinction. For me, the practice is pack instincts. I had no concept of the group, which was working together as a team on Saturday. And then once I got that, then there was no more stress in the practice.
Yeah. You know what? I'll tell you exactly as you're saying what's missing is that I usually, it's my habit to do Candy Cross with them. And when we're out running, it's like we get to a point where it's like being in the group mood because we're all just absolutely running and everybody is focused on running and heading in, you know, whatever direction we're going.
Right.
And it's like the closest thing to freedom I've ever felt in my life, but I haven't done that. I haven't done that all winter with them, so that's probably what's missing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. What's cane crossing?
Candy Cross, it's just like Gajoring only without the skis, you're running.
Oh, okay, I got it, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that should be the organizing principle of their life, that synchronized group activity.
Yeah, yeah.
To up the intensity value is when you post them up and they get the same experience, and it's a lot more intense. But, I definitely like the bucolic calming aspect of group running. That's perfect, too. So this will give you another thing to do, especially in the winter if you're not doing it.
Exactly. And that's the thing. I haven't – I had to back
right.
in for certain reasons, and I haven't been able to do it again. And that's probably the missing piece, and I hadn't really thought about that at all.
Right. Yeah, so when you're going to sit down at the computer, I'd put a resting spot for Diva, and Duncan goes in his little box, and then I'd have Diva laying on a bed and make her lay down 20 feet away someplace, some strategic distance, and you just got to pay attention, make her stay there so she doesn't start vibing him. If she's got a charge, it's got to get out.
Yeah,
so give
I could ask them each in their own crate and just close it up and insist that they stay there.
Yeah, you could do that too. But it's kind of good to get them to choose to stay in their spot where there's no bars, there's no confinement, and they're going to have to work at it, and she's going to have to see Duncan in the crate and internally choose to let it go, as opposed to, well, there's nothing I can do about it, but if I was out, I would do something about it kind of thing. So I would, if you're going to pay attention... If you're not going to pay attention, yeah, just put her in a crate and forget about it. But if you have, you're going to dedicate, all right, I'm going to sit at the computer for an hour. I'm going to put her on her spot, her box, her place. She's going to stay there, and I'm just not going to let that vibe go on. And the other thing you got to do is have her on her box, pet up Duncan in the house, put Duncan in a box, pet up Diva in the house, Bodhi. So they're no longer, if one of them comes over to get on it, they have to lay down. You don't let them come in and get on it. They have to lay down.
And I used to do that. That was the way I was with my dogs initially. And then I had a friend of mine tell me that I shouldn't do that. That was making Duncan more jealous. So I gave it up.
No. Once you give them their purpose, which is this king crossing and post work, then you're telling them, no, this is nothing. What are you vibrating toward this for? That's what the down does, is teaches them that there's nothing to vibrate here. This is this pitch, you know, I'm practicing with the sopranos. It doesn't involve the basses.
Yeah.
You know, the bass don't have to worry about, like in football, it is the wide receiver drills, and the linemen had their thing, and the quarterback receiver had his thing.
Yep.
And you broke up into your specialty. You didn't worry about what the linemen are. The linemen are getting more attention from the coach than we are. You didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you were – so anyhow, yeah, you don't want them vying.
Yep.
You don't want them vying. That's probably your big loading deal going on.
That sounds good. That's actually probably the key to that whole situation.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks, Ben.
Oh, good. Good talking with you.
Thanks for your question, Christine. And again, for those of you who've joined late, if you have a question, *6. We do have a bunch more, so if you can be conscious of that there are other people waiting in line, that would be great. And just to bring this back around, actually that conversation made me think back to our initial question with Debbie. And, you know, of course, Debbie, if you felt like you know, you wanted to go out with your friend with the two littermate females, you know, that might be a good opportunity to head out with the females, do some tugs, some pushing. You know, you can, it might be a fun way to introduce your friend to the kind of things that you're doing with your dog. But that may help resolve some of the friction that those two female littermates feel between each other. That ends up getting taken out on the male dog.
Yeah, that's a good point. If she were to spend some time outside the house really working out that charge, they come in the house, they'll relax.
Yeah. Okay, next question is Jill.
Hello.
Are you there, Jill?
Yes.
Hi, Jill.
Hey, I just have a question about sort of raising a puppy and trying to do it the right way. We have a 5-month-old herding dog, and we've been doing pushing and fetch tug and just trying to develop a relationship with this dog. And how do you know when it's time to move into commands?
Yeah, you're a little bit young now, so I wouldn't worry about it too much. What I would say is depends on what degree of conflict he has to be in, you know, like how many distractions he's got to deal with, and, you know, like how much is he out there in the urban setting and stuff like that. How what's your lifestyle like?
We live in a like kind of a wooded valley where we can't see other houses, and we spend a lot of time hiking. We live in the Seattle area, so we spend a lot of time hiking and in the woods, but we also go into the city with him. So it's both, but probably more on the less distractions side.
Right.
We don't really live an urban lifestyle.
Okay, great. So you got all that wide open spaces and the outdoor thing. The main thing he could be learning, I mean, you can really train a dog to he'll sit down, stay, come when called, believe it or not, without saying a word. So, you know, but when you go for high, he's a 5-month-old dog, he's hanging really close, just be prepared that orbit is going to start to include the big wide world out there at some point.
Right.
You don't want him to go off and have his little yayas for 10 minutes and come back. That's not going to work out for you.
It's detrimental to... What?
Yeah, once he gets the taste of the prey on his own, then you're outside that equation, and that's a degree of energy he's getting that you're just not part of. So So what I would do with my dogs when they're young, and first time we go for a walk in the woods, we have these trails that go everywhere outside the property, but we would spend 10 minutes playing hide-and-seek. I'd hold the dogs, my wife would hide. She'd hold them, I'd hide, and then they'd find her, and then I'd re-hide, and we'd play ping-pong with them. And then after about 10 minutes, we just go for a walk, and they're, like, done. They've had their hunt for us,
Right.
And then they're done, and then we go for a walk, and they're calm for the rest of the walk.
They're not looking for something else as much.
Exactly. So okay. Just make sure with the young dog that those first 10 minutes in the woods, you and your husband are playing hide and seek.
Okay.
And I don't know how excited, you know, you don't want to overexcite them, but.
We've done a little bit of that, and it has worked out good, but I didn't really think about it that way, doing it first to get out, to get it out of him.
Exactly. So when you see the deer, you can say, oh, that's a nice-looking deer. Look at that deer. Then you start going the other way, and you're training him to channel deer energy to you. Then the deer goes away. You get out of the deer zone. You have your little tug toy, and you get him to bite that tug toy, and that becomes what killing a deer feels like.
Do you think it's detrimental to go to dog parks?
I really do. I would find some. What would be really great is you find a friend, and you can trust this dog. You know this dog. I always use the example when my kids were little. You know, we didn't take them to play groups. We went once to Kangaroo Kids, and we said this is a joke. And there's one kid having a ball, and the other kids are terrified. So we just, you know, you find a friend with a baby and the same age and same temperament, and then they develop a friendship and they get socialized. So you can find a fellow dog puppy owner. Now, like if you've got a real energetic puppy and there's somebody with a kind of a softer dog, you know, you can get an older puppy in the mix, 8 months old puppy. So as long as the temperament match for their age levels and all that kind of thing. You just need a couple good doggy buddies. You go to those play groups, and sooner or later, somebody's going to put, especially a little puppy, it doesn't have any social radar yet about who's got the hot socket, and it's going to stick its wet nose right in there, and bum,
yeah.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
And then the younger the dog gets a charge, the long, it's almost for life.
Okay.
The later he gets the charge, it's so specific to when he got it, and it's so easy to deal with. You know, so like, my dog got jumped by a dog when he's 7 years old. It was really bad. It was dog just sunk, bit him in the leg and grabbed him by the neck. And so I won't complete the story, but let me say I extricated the situation. And I finally got the other dog on a leash. And my dog pops up. I make him lay down. And I get collected, and then I release him. And he went on like nothing had happened. It was like nothing had ever happened. Yeah. That was 10 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago. It's got nothing to do now.
But as a little young dog, it would be a bad...
Yeah, well, if he was a five-month-old puppy and got a whoop, then it would have been for the rest of his life that I would have been had to deal with that charge.
Okay.
So most, you know, I always get, I hear somebody calls me from the dog park and they're on their cell phone and talking, it's a beautiful day, and then you're in the background and you hear somebody getting whooped. It's like happened two or three times. And if I lived in a city, I wouldn't take him to the dog park. But I might identify a couple nice puppies so my dog can get together with them. But it just wouldn't be a free-for-all with whoever comes through that gate.
Okay.
Back to your original question about, I really wouldn't think about commands. You can get them to inducively do everything pretty much for the next couple months, as long as when you take him in the city with a nice tight leash and he's really into food, he can follow you around really good. And when he gets all confused, you just stop, and then he reacquires a signal and you go on. And you don't. It's all finessing at this age.
Okay.
I wouldn't worry too much about commanding stuff.
So, when do you worry about that?
Well, if you're in a real intense situation, like, let me just say, just to be specific, I would say around 10 months is a good age.
Okay.
As long as everything's fine. But I will say that if he's in a real intense situation, it's unavoidable, you know you got to do it, then I would teach him to lay down and stay.
Okay.
It's better than the alternative.
Right. Okay. All right. That's helpful. Thank you.
Good.
But Jill, if you're doing like the box work with him at all, you know, and you can treat it, you know, not so much worrying about the commands that you're teaching him, but more that you're just teaching your pup this dynamic of, you know, when to stop, when to go, to be completely focused on you,
right?
And controlling your pup's position strictly through your body language and their position in space, you know, up on the box versus, you know, on the ground next to you.
Right.
Then you're going to be reinforcing those lessons for later on.
Right.
But the idea is that you treat it now just like a big game, you know,
right.
not getting hung up on the perfection of the technique necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Jill. All right. We have a couple more questions in line. I don't have a first name. Is this Dave?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Dave.
I have an interesting situation. I've got a three-year-old Portuguese water dog that we're having a lot of aggression problems with. And having listened to the previous call and you talking about energy, what popped to my mind was when he was probably 10 weeks old, he did get bit by another dog.
Right.
And this aggression problem he's had is really bad in the house, bad on the leash, and not so bad at all when he's just out running around with a couple other dogs.
Right.
But if he's in the house, he barks at anything that goes by, and if there's somebody at the door, he gets so wound up that he will even misdirect his energy at me and bite me.
Right, right, right. Have you been correcting him for the aggression?
I've tried a number of different things of you know, just trying to distract him from it, get him away from the window. Only once have I tried to put a leash on him and sort of guide him away from the door or the window. Only did it once because he bit me when I did it.
Right.
So okay. I don't know. You know, I'm trying a few things with him, but...
what are you trying? What are you doing?
Well, what I've just started doing, just for protection in the house with the family members, is I started getting him used to wearing a muzzle. And if I've got people coming to the house that he doesn't know, then at least if I've got him on the muzzle, that if he does get escalated, he can't hurt anybody on it. And then I can get between him, and I've tried to teach him that his safe place is his crate. And if he goes to his crate, he can be in there and be calm and be all right. But he'll go in there, and he'll still be really riled.
Yeah. Okay, so... He will not take food when someone's at the door, right?
No, you can't. And he's very food-driven. Regular training, he's very food-driven.
Right, and this is why. There's two brains that make animal consciousness. One is concerned, the big one in the head is concerned with balance. And that's where his consciousness is. He is out of his mind because he's not in his body. And he's not in his body because at 10 weeks, that balance circuitry got totally charged up because of the danger he was in. Any perception of danger comes through the balance circuitry. So any correction you're doing is just going to drive it down deeper. When you come home, does he get really happy to see you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if he's in the house by himself, and I've got two other dogs in the house, but if they're in the house by themselves, and I walk in the door, you know, just general excitement. Come wagging the tail, no barking, nothing. If he's in the house with my wife and I come in the door, initially it'll be barking at me, and then I'll say something like, you know, Cosmo, it's me. And then it'll just be tail wagging, happy to see me.
Right. And so what's your wife like? What's her role with the dog?
She is getting much better with him. She was scared of him for a while because she's been bit by him too.
And is she really worried about him and takes care of him? And you're the disciplinarian?
No, I'd say we're probably equal on that. I mean, I tend to walk him. I am the one that walks him and takes him out rollerblading and stuff because she's not. She doesn't feel confident that she could handle him if he went after somebody when he's on the leash. because he has a
All right, well, we won't dwell on that too much. I want to stay on the main theme, which is, he's not ready for prime. How long have you had him again? Just
3 years.
Oh, 3 years?
Yeah.
Oh, and this has been going on all this time?
It's gotten worse in the last year.
Okay, yeah, usually around 2 to 3 is when stuff really intensifies. So totally solvable, but another way of saying it, hopefully to give you a handle on it, is aggression that you're seeing, that hysteria and the hyper-friendliness when he sees you, that is incoherent energy. So what we want to do is turn it into coherent energy. And coherent energy, for example, like incoherent energy would be this high-pitched screams of this fusillade of barks, each one indiscernible. It's just a screaming, a gnashing. And if you listen to it, you can see that it's originating from his head. It's all coming out of his head. All the bark is coming out of his head.
Yeah, and, I could see that.
Yeah. So if you could get the bark to come out of his gut, you would have coherent energy, and he's moving a lot of energy. Now, his aggression comes from fear, and he's just putting out this fear signature, and it works. If he's alive at the end of the day, no matter what anybody did, that did work.
Yeah.
So what we got to do is get him in his gut, and the only way you can do it is through hunger. The only way. So I would not put a bowl of food down for this dog. Why feed the problem? I would teach him to bark at the door coherently and hold the, you know, that's a whole training protocol. Quick way to do that is tie him up to a post, stand away a couple feet, tease him with the food, hold the food up over his head, up in near your, in your chest, and encourage him to do it. If he licks his lips, if you see any little reference of the hunger circuitry, even looking away, zing him with some food. Get a nice big handful of food. So if you could get him to take food at the front door, and the easiest way to get him to take food at the front door is get him to bark at, as a way of processing his fear through this clear barking. Like, I used to train police dogs, and I taught them the German method of hold at bay, and I taught them a very coherent bark, and they would not bite a criminal after a high-speed chase, captured the guy up, you know, took the cop 20 minutes to catch up to the dog where he was holding the guy at bay against a wall, and this bark is what made the dog reliable. He would ba, 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 and he would do that for 20, 30, 40 minutes and just hold the guy in position for the cop to get there. So it's a super reliable behavior that gives the dog a chance to move a lot of energy, and what's really interesting, it gives him a ton of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy to teach a dog that barks to be quiet. It's impossible to teach a dog that's barking from his head to be quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, he just gets riled right up.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've got a pretty intense issue that I'm not going to be able to give you the quick answer in the space of a call, but the correcting thing isn't going to work in a logic stream of, you know, put him away. And I'm not too worried about the muzzle to keep people safe, but it does bottle up the jaws, so you can't really get a good bark when they're doing that. So if you feel safer with the muzzle and the people feel safer, and then and if they'll, after the course of 20 minutes, you could feel a little cookie through the muzzle, that would be steps on the right direction, and that can help calm the dog a little bit. But the real thing has to happen, that he's got to be interested in the food at the door. And the final thing is, we got to go at that balance circuitry itself. And what I would do is do about a month of this parking and food at the door, and you could play the bad guy, and your wife could hold the dog or tether him in the foyer and get that bark, and you play the bad guy at the door. And you can vary your degree of menace. And even if he knows it's you, it's still teaching him coherent behavior at the door where you're really going to need it. And then finally, what I would do, and Neil's, you really should get Neil's DVDs if you don't already, with the box training, is I would get, train him like it's set out in the DVD with the boxes, and then get a very high box, or even you could take a plastic dog crate that's about 2.5-3 feet off the ground, and look on YouTube. I have a video on how to vet a dog. It's the exact same principle, and you give him a balance problem he can solve, which is stay on that box, and the technique is on the video, versus a problem he can't solve is how to come into balance with this human being that's knocking at the door, and eventually a dog as well. We can use a box to help him with dogs too.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope you can track all that, but if you could start getting him taking food from you in a charged moment, you are 90% of the way home.
Okay.
All right.
I will do that.
Good, good.
I'm fine working on him.
Has he ever made any contact with any dogs? Oh, yeah, when he runs free, you say he's good, right?
Yeah, yeah, and he goes...
And by the way, the reason when he runs free, he's good, is because that balance problem is satisfied. If output can match input, so if this he sees a dog and that's 200,000 volts of input, but by running, he's draining it down to 100,000 volts, and then he can negotiate. Once you get below a critical level, he can figure out how to make contact with that remaining shortfall. But he can't do it at that peak pitch. So that's exactly why off-leash he's not aggressive and on-leash he is. And
okay.
Compressed areas he is, and not when he's in wide open spaces. So the point of the hunger is to make him feel free even in a compressed area. That's the point of the hunger, is to make him feel expansive and that output and input are matching.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
And if it helps at all, I'll try and put a quick little page together that has the link that, you know, to Kevin's YouTube video that he mentioned. So that would definitely help you. And if you go to naturaldogblog.com/aggression, that leads you to sort of a portal article about aggression in dogs. Maybe you've already seen it, but there's definitely a lot of information there to help you kind of wrap your brain around what's going on with the circuitry when a dog starts flipping over to aggressive behavior, and some other strategies as well. Once you've got him taking food in those moments.
Yeah. Okay.
Great.
Appreciate it, guys.
Oh, sure thing. So we've gone a little over, but we do have one more question in the queue. Kevin, are you good with staying on to take that? Okay.
Of course, sure.
All right.
Hi, this is Joyce.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi.
Oh, Joyce.
Hey, I've posted on Neil's blog site for him quite a bit, and it's been really great, and I've gotten a lot of benefit, suggestions, and support. And but I just want to explore this, with you, Kevin. It's just an amazing opportunity. And so I have a chocolate lab that we adopted 4 months ago, and he's 6 years old. And he doesn't play, won't bite on a toy, so I haven't been able to do tug with him. But I've been doing the pushing, and we just started working on the box recently. And I started all this with him about 2 or 3 months ago.
Yep.
And when we go outside for any reason, he's like immediately highly energized, and he really is into cats. So and there's a lot of cats in the neighborhood. So,
yeah, that's where the bike goes.
Yeah, and so, but he doesn't. He's starting to with the pushing. When he's taking the food from my hand, I can feel he's a little bit more bitey about it. Maybe he could start to, you know, take a toy from me.
Well, in other words, the intensity of the cat is coming to the way he takes the food from your hand.
A little bit, it's starting to, yeah.
Good, good.
And I've tried lots of different things. People have had great suggestions, like well, one of Neil's suggestions, which was also had to do with his insightful question to me about, well, how much play do I have in my life? So I've started getting sillier and letting myself really lighten up in working with my dog, you know, running around the backyard and, you know, falling on the ground and rolling over a little bit and then giving him some food or things like that. And I've tried putting all of his food inside his marrow bone and rolling that along the ground, and he'll run after it, but then he just licks at it. He'll lick at anything, but he doesn't bite on, you know, on anything.
Have you tried a fluffy ball, one of those fluff stuffed balls, and put it on a rope?
I haven't tried a fluff stuffed ball on a rope, but I have another toy that I've put on a rope and dragged it around, and he's just looking at me the whole time, doesn't seem to care at all about the toy. My most recent success is to put some of his food in the bottom of a coffee cup and kind of fold it and mash it up, but sort of get on the floor with him and start, or outside, you know, on the ground, and start kind of tearing it up with him. And then sometimes he'll, like, put his teeth on it and start tearing at it. So I'm kind of helping him with that, and then I'm able to pull maybe a little bit on the cup.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, it's that's one of the things. I don't yet have the ability to
use
pud with him.
You can also poke a little hole in a rawhide chew,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of like what you're doing, and then you can let him start to chew it, and you start to wiggle it away, and pretty soon he's going to have to seize it.
I haven't tried rawhide yet, I guess.
You can try that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, so have you tried keep away with somebody else?
No.
That's another way you can do is you can...
Okay.
Sometimes what's good is you take a sock, knot it around a tennis ball, put a little lanyard on it, and you can heave it to your friend. And you can whack it on the ground. It'll bounce. It'll have a little life to it, and you can pitch it to them and see if pitching it over his head like Monkey in the Middle. If that will do it. But let's just say it won't. Next question is what's his deal with the cats? What does he do with the cats?
He gets really energized, and you know he pulls. I have him on the leash, and so what I do is I just stop and wait for him to break his focus slightly and try to get his attention for pushing. And it's starting to get a little bit easier. Sometimes I can choke up on the leash till I'm right next to him and get in front of him, start running away from him. But at times, I still totally disappear off his radar for a little while. And he's so highly energized the second we go outside.
What would he do if he were running and there was a cat, what would happen?
If he were running?
Would he hurt a cat, or is he...
I don't know. I don't know.
Is he into little squirrels and stuff like that?
Yeah, little squirrels too, yeah. And he used to be anxious or get really energized if he would see a dog, but that we've gotten over that. He was much easier to redirect into pushing at the sight of another dog.
Right.
The cat still just really... Really,
and what's he like? Really super duper friendly to people?
No, he's a little anxious when somebody new comes in. He kind of like steps his feet up a little bit, and he gets this almost like a little grin, like where you can see his teeth a little bit, but he cowers a little and he startles.
That's why he's not giving that's why he can't give a human the bite.
Okay.
And ever use a head halter with him?
Nope.
Okay, but how old was he when you got him, did you say?
6, and I've only had him for 4 months.
Oh, okay, so you don't even know what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know his history, but he seems overly submissive.
Okay. Have you taught him to bark on command?
No.
Yeah, start doing that, because that can start to get him dynamic.
Yeah, I've never heard him bark for any reason he doesn't bark.
Yeah, see, that'll help open up the whole conduit and get him... So what I would do is two other things you can add to that is, what the heck, try the Monkey in the Middle thing and rawhide and all that stuff. But there's a real intensity holding that bite in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the first thing you want to do is teach them to speak on commands.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And I think there's some videos on my website about that. I hope they're up there. We filmed something. I don't know if it's up there or not.
Yeah.
But it's pretty easy to do. Just tie a dog up, frustrate him with food, hold it up over his head, tight to your body and your chest. You pat your chest with the food. Hopefully you can extend your hand, tease him with it. You know, you kind of tease him with it and frustrate him, and eventually he might bark.
That'll be a good activity for me, actually. That'll be probably hard for me to do. So it's perfect.
Good, good. So that's really important. That's super duper important, because that starts getting the energy moving. It's sort of like, I liken it to a kid, a shy child in class raising their hand, getting the answer right and feeling, whoa, school's all right. What it takes to raise your hand and feel vulnerable. It's an act of vulnerability and then putting some oomph behind it.
Yeah.
So, again, it's like raising your hand. Yes, teacher, I know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that's really important.
Okay.
The next thing to do is post them up and have a
boogeyman. What does that mean, post them up?
Oh, just tie them to a flexible post about a foot and a half, about shoulder and a half height.
Okay.
And it should have a little spring in it. I say post, but it could be a sapling would be good, and with soft leather so he doesn't hear a clinking of a metal thing. But, I mean, he can all get acclimated to that. And you may find if you post him up, the farther away you are from him, the easier it will be for him to bark at you, and that pulls you in and gets the food. So you can play with your distance from him.
Okay.
That might make a big difference.
Okay.
But the next thing you have to do is the intensity he has for cats, you want to get onto a human where he's got this, he won't give the bite to a human because of this block, which is what's going on. The block is in his mouth, which is why I mentioned the halty, but that's why he's doing the grinning that you mentioned. That's like a bark that won't come out.
Okay.
So barking is going to help that a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
When you see that, you're going to ask him to bark. Once you got a good bark, that you're going to apply it to that moment.
Okay.
And it's really cool. It's like dogs want to bite each other, and they start to bark at each other because they have that new way. That's why I mentioned the police dog hold at bay. He wants to bite the criminal, but he kept barking.
That's great.
Yeah, an alternate.
That makes sense.
That makes him feel great and in control, and his output equals input. So at any rate, you got the bark going. But the next thing you might have to do is the boogeyman on the skulking around at the edge of the property and get him. You may need to shock the system to jig out that bark.
Yeah, okay.
And the final thing you can try doing is grab his muzzle with your hand, and Sweetie Pie taught them, and kind of annoy him with your with your hand on his muzzle so he gets a little pissed off at you.
Okay.
He's too nice. He's too nice.
Yeah, he is too nice.
Right.
Way too nice. I've told people what he's like with, you know, my thought being like, this is really not healthy. But, you know, their first thought as I'm starting to describe it is like, oh, what a great dog. Well, what's the problem? And I said, well, it is a problem. He's way too submissive. I said, it's not healthy.
Excellent. So the next thing you got to find is who in your life is too nice. And
me?
Start barking at them.
Yeah.
So you can start barking. And, so that's great. And the other thing, another good way, let's say you're doing all this and he's starting to loosen up a bit. What I've found is really good to get dogs to bite is, does he like to roll over on his back for belly rubs?
Yes.
Yeah, good. So you get him on his back, and you start grabbing his neck and grabbing his fussies grabbing his neck, and you kind of play patsy with his with your hand. Think of your hand as a dog's muzzle, as mouth, jaw.
Okay.
And he's playing with this other dog, and they'd be gripping each other, right?
Right.
Yeah, if they're playing really good, they both would be grabbing each other's neck. And you want to you want to imitate that play, Neil was saying, becoming more playful. You want to imitate how two dogs that are the best play buddies on earth would play with each other.
Okay.
And you'll notice one dog will nip at the legs, and they'll knock the other one off balance, and the other one will get playful. So not, using your hand as a jaw and biting his feet. And then, you know, when he wants a belly rub, you roll him over, you rub a dub, and you start. When he's upside down, you may start hear him sneezing.
Yeah, he sneezes a lot, actually.
Yeah, that's the bite is behind that.
Okay.
And you start playing with him. He starts sneezing, and you grab him, his cheeks and his muzzle, and you got to have to find the right level of annoyance but playful annoyance. Like, you really want to imitate that irrepressible black lab that would annoy the hell out of them, but they'd end up playing.
Right, okay.
You know, like
my
dogs are 9 years old, and, you know, they're so playful, but the neighbors have a young lab, and she comes over, and she's just in their face, and they start to get annoyed, and then starts biting. She's submarining them. She's biting their feet, and then they just get into a group, you know, crash, and they're just having the time of their lives. But she had to, like, knock them out of their 9-year-old.
Yeah, so is it better for me to just do this with him, or would there be a benefit at some point of, pairing him with another dog?
Of what?
Is there a benefit of pairing him with another dog to help
No,
just me?
Oh, with you. He's got to get the bite out with a human.
All right.
So that you can take it off
won't help
cat.
Him. Okay.
Yeah, another dog won't help him.
Okay.
But you're actually going to be helping him with dogs even more with this as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to continue
that's true.
Work. So then when he gets his, when he can really get, you know, the more he plays with dogs, the more he plays with you, it's going to be that much easier for you to tell him, hey, leave. And then eventually you can just say, hey, leave those cats alone. That doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
It'll make total sense to him.
Okay.
Because he's getting the yayas out with you.
Yeah. Okay. And in the meantime, it seems like I think I'm finally wising up to that it makes more sense for me to spend more time just working with him in the backyard where he's not as overly energized than to take him on walks and just keep working on the pushing and all this stuff, because otherwise it seems like he's not gaining any gaining
he's
any ground.
For,
he's just,
That's why they have training camp for the football team. Mm-hmm. When they're ready for the game, it's weeks later. You know, these are humans that have played it all their life, but they have training camp. They don't see any outside teams until they perfect the plays. Hopefully.
Yeah, I just have this concept that I need to take my dog for a walk because our yard
is
not
huge. Exactly. That is so wrong, and everybody's getting in such trouble because they think exercise is all they got to do, and socializing is just social collisions, and that's not true at all. You can totally socialize your dog by playing with them and pushing and flipping polarities and doing all that stuff and getting the bite out and the bark out. You are socializing him just by doing that. And there's one other thing I wanted to say, and I just forgot it. But
about the yard or walks.
Darn.
Bite.
What were you talking about right before then?
Walks.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is what you can do. You can increase the level of hunger.
Okay.
On your next outing, what you do all this stuff in your backyard. That's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say a couple weeks go by, start really cutting back the food.
Okay.
Really cutting back the food, and he's really hungry, and then you go out that first leg, and you get him, and you'll see how you have much more energy for that food.
Okay.
And
he really goes for the food as it is now, so.
Oh, even with the cats.
Well, no, not with the cats.
Yeah, that's what
but
I'm talking
otherwise.
About.
Okay, so
get
even...
Get into the cat zone and stand still, and he's really hungry.
And if he's really
hungry. You're going to start getting probably a level of pushing you haven't seen yet.
Okay. All right. I'll look forward to that.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. And thanks to Neil, too. This is fantastic. Appreciate
it.
Okay,
excellent. Bye. And just... Also, some of the exercises that Kevin was talking about to get your dog to bark and, you know, the boogeyman at the perimeter of your property, if you go to naturaldogblog.com/predator, that will take you to an article that that explains the concept of where's the danger and so as a counterpoint to the question that we spend most of our time talking about, which is what do I do with my energy, teaching your dog what to do with their energy. This also is about giving them the distinction of where in their life is the danger, and conversely, where isn't the danger.
Right.
There's so much on the websites. It's just amazing. It's really appreciate all the stuff that's there, and so it's helpful to be directed to something specific since there's so much. All right, thank you. I'll get off. Bye.
Oh, sure thing,
very nice talking to you. Thanks.
Well, I think that was all our questions, and I'm going to unmute everyone here. And I just want to thank you all again for coming, and Kevin, especially thank you for all of your time and your great answers to people's questions. I think you've given some excellent strategies and ways of thinking about dog behavior that are hopefully going to be really helpful to the people listening to this call. So thank you very much, Kevin, for that.
Yeah, well, thank you, Neil. It was fun teaming up with you, and I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. And also, I can't let the call end without mentioning that Kevin does have a seminar for those of you who feel like traveling in Rowe, Massachusetts. He's teaching a weekend seminar. It starts on May 14th, and it goes through the 16th. And you can find out more information about that on Kevin's site, which is naturaldogtraining.com. And also, Kevin and I are both available to do consultations over the phone or through email, so you can contact either of us through our respective websites if you're interested in getting more personal attention with whatever issues you're dealing with your dogs. So thanks again, and have a great rest of your week, and we'll keep posted for more interviews and more conference calls.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Kevin.